where it burst apart in a gory spray of guts and feathers. Calling in rage, a condor sailed under the basket to land on the pallet, its claws clinging tightly to the plastic. Shoving the barrel of the Steyr through the open spaces in the flooring, Ryan fired the long blaster at point-blank range. The bird exploded in a spray of feathers, but the corpse stayed there, the claws locked tight in death. Using three rounds, Mildred took out a condor flying by, Christy got another, Dean missed twice, then JB triggered the shotgun, and two more were ripped apart by ferocious flechette blast. Moving hastily away from the Bob Marley, the remaining flock whirled about, screaming in rage. Then they started to fly away, returning beaten to their nests in the rocky crags of the congealed lava flow. Curiously, there was a flash of light from a cliff at the very end of the peninsula. Something streaked toward the balloon in a skylark tail of fire. The invisible object slammed directly into a condor and violently detonated. The concussion rocked the rope basket with savage force.
Firebird!
More coming.
Jack coolly aimed his .357 Magnum blaster at the fiery exhaust of the rockets and carefully squeezed off shots. If they hit, there was no reaction.
Damn!
Dropping her revolver, Christy yanked out the very pistol, thanking the forces of the universe that she'd reloaded. Holding the signal device in a two-handed grip, she held her breath and forced everything else from her mind but the approaching Firebird. The trajectory was impossible. The Firebird was arching up from the ground, the balloon rising and drifting away, plus the wind was blowing in gusts, not a steady breeze. There'd never been worse conditions for a shot, and they had only a half dozen flares. Gently, she squeezed the trigger. The colorful blue flare streaked toward an empty patch of sky. A split second later, the rocket rose to meet the wad of burning magnesium. Then another Firebird launched. The fiery backblast silhouetted the Sekhmen and Hummers parked on the approaching cliff in stark clarity. While the others maintained a steady fusillade at the war wags, Dean took Christie's empty weapon and passed her the second flare gun, loaded and ready. Sweat trickling down her face, Christy shot at the second rocket and made a hit. Then three Firebirds rose from the cliff, with two more close behind.
God damn it!
JB triggered the Uzi on full auto, throwing flame at the receding Sekhmen. As her ancient K-blaster clicked empty, Mildred grabbed a reloaded Vary from Dean and shot off a flare. The sizzling green round punched through the leading rocket, making it explode, the blast damaging the Firebird alongside and throwing the rocket wildly out to sea.
Woohoo! You can go touch the Bob Marley!
Slamming in his last clip for the Steyr, Ryan fired as fast as he could work the bolt. Another Firebird altered course and shot straight upward to disappear into the stormy clouds. But despite the amount of copper-jacketed lead going their way, the last two rockets bore straight in at the companions. Her hair a wild corona, Christy released a green flare, but the wind shear threw it away from the incoming missiles. As JB slapped in a fresh clip, Ryan fired again, and a rocket tore itself apart. As he worked the bolt, the spent shell jammed in the breech. Dropping the blaster to the plastic floor, Ryan drew his Sig Sauer and started banging away. Meanwhile, Mildred and Christy sent off a double flare charge from the painfully hot Varys. The signaling devices weren't meant to be weapons, and were overheating from the constant use. The flares were sticking to the barrel from the accumulated heat, which also burned the women's fingers. In a gorgeous mix of colors, the flares curved toward the incoming missile, when one abruptly died in mid-flight. The other erupted in a blinding purple flash, and the missile shot right through the display, completely undamaged. The companions concentrated their attention on the last rocket, but it was horribly close. JB abandoned the Uzi and used the last few shells in the shotgun to send off a hailstorm of flechettes. Incredibly, the companions could see the damage it inflicted as the missile appeared to be slowing, and for several breathless seconds, it seemed to hang motionless in the sky behind them. Then, the flame of its rear exhaust sputtered away and died, the reserve of black powder fuel gone. Rendered powerless, the lethal Firebird fell away and disappeared into the night.
Not bad.
As the companions relaxed, a salvo of rockets was launched from the Hummers on top of the jagged cliff. But the Bob Marley's passengers withheld shooting and merely watched as the swarm of deadly missiles climbed ever higher into the dark sky, only to slow as their tail flames weakened and died, the dreaded Firebirds tumbling helplessly into the cold sea.
Finally out of range.
Sons of bitches want us bad.
Hopefully that's the last we see of them.
Glancing at the floor, Mildred saw the ejected brass had fallen through the holes in the plastic pallet and couldn't be gathered for repacking. They were low on ammo, attacked constantly from every direction, and riding a makeshift helium balloon, mostly held together by spit and baling wire.
Huh.
What?
Remember the condors?
Yeah.
Those were an endangered species in my time.
So?
Now we are.
Hobbling to the edge of the crumbling cliff, Mitchum roared defiantly as he emptied his blaster at the departing airship.
No, not again! Not fucking again! Motherfuckers!
The man turned toward the line of Hummers parked nearby.
You there! Launch another bird!
Belay that! We failed, Colonel. They're gone.
The hell they are! We're going back to Cascade!
Limping to the wag, Mitchum climbed behind the steering wheel and started the engine.
Get in, Glassman. We can race after them in the Petey's. Those are a lot faster than that floating soap bubble. If we use the coal oil fuel instead of wood, we can easily get them back into range again and finish the bastard job once and forever.
Sergeant Campbell, any more Firebirds on the boats?
Yes, sir. 16 more in the arms trunk of each Petey.
You see? More than enough for another attack.
Only if we don't encounter any deepers on the journey back home.
Tomorrow's problem.
Mitchum spun the steering wheel, driving the Hummer back and forth as he hurriedly turned on the narrow crag. A rear tire went over the cliff, but the wag didn't tilt, and he fought it back onto firm ground. Time was against them. Every minute put Ryan that much further out of his grasp.
We'll need to leave the Hummers behind.
He led the wag convoy along the narrow trail of the peninsula to the island. There was a sheer drop into the sea on both sides, but the pre-dark headlights gave enough illumination to keep him from driving into the abyss.
Dropping the weight will give us better speed.
Holding on to the door and windshield, Glassman scowled before answering. He was sick of this man's private blood feud, and the Baron's threat against his family was lessening in effect with every hour he was away from them.
Too risky. That leaves us on foot if they go inland somewhere.
We'll take that chance.
No, you will. Because if we lose the Outlanders again, I'll personally bring you alive to the Lord Baron as payment for costing him so many men and weps.
Yeah?
The Colonel went for his flintlock. Only the weapon wasn't in its holster, and the cold barrel of a blaster was pressed to his neck from behind.
Do as the captain says, or I'll be delighted to pull the trigger. Your call, lubber.
As the Bob Marley floated away on the evening breeze, the companions shifted their backpacks to make some room and settled in for their flight. With no way to calculate airspeed, they didn't have any idea how long the journey to Forbidden Island would take. Maybe only a few hours, but it could be much longer. Time passed slowly, the moon traveling across the starry sky, while the companions took turns catching short naps. There was little room in the rope basket, but they'd lived in cramped quarters before and knew how to make do. After the weapons had been cleaned and checked, the MRE envelopes were carefully ripped open and the chow eaten cold. It was edible, but no more than that. Mildred tried to make coffee in a tin cup, and while the brown crystals dissolved satisfactorily, neither the sugar nor the powdered cream would. She experimented with her butane lighter to no success, and in the end, poured the sodden mess overboard. Pulling out a plastic safety razor, Jack dry-shaved while standing guard duty, the scrape of the twin blades becoming fainter as he successfully removed his snowy beard. Hoping nobody was watching, Dean rubbed a palm along his own chin, but found only smooth skin.
Damn.
Just then, something in the darkness caught Ryan's attention. He studied the open sky until he caught the moon's reflection off leathery wings. The soft flapping grew steadily louder, and when Ryan was sure the creature was coming their way, he waited until the clouds parted, catching it in plain sight, and snapped off a shot with a Sig Sauer. Gushing blood, the mutie bat spiraled down out of control to splash into the smooth expanse of the shimmering sea. The blaster's discharge made Dean stand and draw his own weapon.
What was that?
Just a bat. Already aced. Everything's green.
A bat?
Curiously, the boy looked over the rope sides of the makeshift basket and watched the dying creature flounder in the water, sharp fins already circling the bloody carcass. Then huge white figures rose from beneath the waves and began tearing the wriggling corpse apart.
Those sharks?
Great white.